Pacific Islands without high-speed internet or any internet at all are eager to be connected to the rest of the world, but geopolitical tensions threaten to derail planned infrastructural work. Much of the Pacific is linked by undersea internet cables connecting either to Sydney, Guam or Hawaii. And while connections have increased in recent years, many countries still rely on a single cable or have none at all. But as Chinese companies become more involved in laying undersea cables, geopolitical concerns about security and spying have caused some planned projects to be axed. Currently, Nauru, Kiribati and the Federated States of Micronesia are looking at other options for high-speed internet after concerns about a Chinese bid for the contract forced the World Bank to can the project. It's now looking at opportunities to connect to the United States or to Australia via the Solomon Islands. Dr. Amanda Watson is a research fellow in the Department of Pacific Affairs at the Australian National University. Amanda, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Hello, thank you.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I suppose as we get used to more and more satellite provision, that we've still got this network of internet cables, big cables running along the seabeds of the world's oceans, and they are very important.
Yes, that's right. The cables are like kind of like water pipes transmitting data between different countries or between islands within countries. And yes, that's right. The internet, if you send an email to someone in Australia from where you are, for instance, there's a chance that that email, that information will transfer through a cable underneath the ocean.
So can you give us an overview of the situation in Pacific, what sorts of connections many of the nations have and which have a poor or no internet connection?
Yes, that's right. So some of the Pacific Island countries have no cable connection at present. Those include Kiribati, Nauru and Tokelau, although all three are in different stages of planning, as you alluded to. Norfolk Island, Pitcairn Islands and Tuvalu do not have cables, although Tuvalu does have a World Bank project that's looking at various aspects to do with communication and connectivity, so that may include a cable. Of course, the outer islands of some of the Pacific countries don't have cable connections, such as in Kiribati and Vanuatu. But some of the countries have just one cable, such as Vanuatu and Tonga, and that does mean that the people in those countries do rely a lot on that one cable. So, for instance, in Tonga, their cable went down for a couple of weeks at one time when it was damaged, which meant that there was almost no communications at all in that country for a couple of weeks. Often the telecommunications or telephone connections can run through the same cables as well. So the citizens in these countries are very reliant on a limited number of cables.
So what is the history of how these countries have been connected to the internet and how it's been paid for? And then we'll talk about what's going on now.
Yes, certainly. So most of the cables in the Pacific are either run by private companies or they've been funded through aid donations or multilateral loans such as from the Asian Development Bank and the World Bank. And most of the cables to Pacific Island countries have been laid by companies from America or Japan, or the there's a Finnish company as well. There's a few companies like that that have laid the cables. I guess the interesting development that has happened in the most recent years is that some Chinese companies have looked to try and get into the cable laying business as well.
This comes down to the geopolitics of the region, in which for strategic reasons, both the US and China have interests, and we, let alone Australia and New Zealand, of course, but we're talking about the two big players here. Now, we know that China has, through various means, provided infrastructure and buildings and aid and support to the Pacific, and many would say America has probably lost ground and neglected its strategic interest over some time. Now the particular area of influence appears to be these cables. And how much is China endeavouring to be involved in providing new internet connections?
Yes, so certainly there's a company called Huawei Marine, which is obviously a Chinese company. They say that they have no connections to the Chinese government and that they're not trying to do anything in terms of using their systems for spying or anything like that. They've denied such claims or allegations. But certainly there is some concern being expressed by US officials and others about the company Huawei and what they might be doing. To date, though, no Pacific country has had an international cable connected by Huawei, although in fact Huawei Marine did have a contract to connect a cable to Solomon Islands. But I think that, well, it's evident that Solomon Islands government basically tore up that contract when Australia offered to fund that cable instead. So it's quite interesting what's happening.
So the Five Eyes countries were already concerned about Huawei when it came to the rollout of things like 5G, right? I think America banned them. I can't remember what happened ultimately in Australia. Did it ban them also from a role in its 5G projects?
Yes, Huawei has been banned from the rollout of Australia's 5G networks and also from the national broadband network in Australia as well.
So now this focus is on the underground cables. What then is going to happen to ensure they get the kind of linkages to the world that they're obviously seeking and many would argue need and deserve, if there is now a move to interfere with what China is proposing to do? Are we seeing other countries, you mentioned Australia, other countries prepared to step up and say, hey, look, we will do it?
Yes, so there's quite a lot happening. So, for instance, the country of Palau, the independent Micronesian country of Palau, has just one cable, and they're going to have a second cable, which is going to be funded by Australia, Japan, and the United States of America through a trilateral partnership. So there are various initiatives going on. Timor-Leste is also very close to the Pacific, and they've had some funding from Australia through the Australian Infrastructure Financing Facility for the Pacific to look at the design phase and route options for them. So there's various initiatives that are going on. But one that is quite interesting, which you alluded to in your introduction, is the East Micronesia cable. And that was to go to a few of the countries that don't have cables at present, including Nauru, and to be funded by the World Bank and the Asian Development Bank. It was supposed to be finished by the middle of this year. However, there were three tender bids received and all three tender bids were rejected. And so at present, those countries are back on the drawing board in terms of wondering what's going to happen with their international internet connectivity.
Has anything changed since the AUKUS announcement recently, which of course was a different matter? It was to do primarily with the submarine deal Australia had with France that it then cancelled, but this new kind of cooperation and infrastructure agreement between Australia, the UK and the US.
Yes, I think it's yet to be seen whether this new deal will have any impact. The other arrangement that could have some impact, though, is the Quad, which is a slightly different grouping, and the Quad leaders met recently, and that's India, Australia, the United States and Japan, and they have quite an interest in telecommunications and other forms of infrastructure as well as critical technologies. So they, I think, are probably more likely to get active in this space of providing internet connectivity to countries who are seeking it.
So the Pacific's kind of caught in the middle now of about three different sort of geopolitical shifts in some ways, isn't it? And, you know, it would be interesting to see whether these nations come to the party instead of just leaving these nations, I suppose, at the whim of whomever's talking to whom at the moment or linking up with whom and who's concerned about China.
And I think it's quite important that the Pacific Island countries' leadership, the heads of state and the relevant ministers, such as communication ministers, are actually consulted in the Pacific Island countries, because certainly one thing that I don't think is a good idea is for external players to make announcements and say things like, oh, we're going to do such and such, we're going to provide such and such, without adequate consultation to find out from the leaders in those Pacific Island countries what they actually want and what they'd actually like.
And is that what's happening, Amanda? Ideal. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think it to some extent, yes. I mean, certainly with the East Micronesia cable, we don't know for certain. It's not been publicly stated why the three tender bids were rejected, but there was some pressure from the United States towards the intended recipient countries, including Nauru and Kiribati, to reject a bid that had been put in there by a Chinese company because of cybersecurity and possibly spying concerns. So there was some pressure placed on those countries when they were supposed to be having a role in making a decision about which bid was selected. So I guess it's, these are delicate negotiations, but I'm just trying to say that I think it really is important that the Pacific Island countries are adequately consulted about what they need.
Thank you. Dr. Amanda Watson, Research Fellow at the Department of Pacific Affairs at the Australian National University.